So today, I kind of felt weird today, to be honest. Like, I've kind of felt weird. I don't know, just strange. Maybe it's a spiritual attack. Who knows? So bear with me. So last week, we were in a sermon called, the whole idea is that you and I were made for more. That Ephesians chapters, the six chapters of Ephesians is going to give us an idea of what it looks like to be all that God has called us to be. Last week, we talked about this idea from more effort to more Jesus. That in the churches, this is really for church leaders as well, but there's this idea that you and I also need to not necessarily give less effort, but we also need to be more about Jesus. That you can get people to a church, and that's a good thing. We want you to come to our gatherings. But you can also bring Jesus with you, that we can elevate Jesus more in our churches. And we need to get people to Jesus. Because if you remember, we're not the one who changes lives, right? Jesus is the one who changes lives. And if we can get people to Jesus, it will change their life. Now, this week, the idea, and I mentioned this earlier, is that you were created to be more. You were created to be more. It all starts with being. You can do a lot of things, but it has to flow from who you are on the inside. You were called to be more. I'm just getting to this book, and it's a great business book. If you're a business guy in here, maybe you've heard of it. It's called The E-Myth. It's called The E-Myth. If you like business, you need to look at it. Anybody have heard of The E-Myth? Anybody? Yeah. It's a great book. So I'm listening to it it's an audiobook, so I've been listening to a guy by the name of Michael Gerber. And the premise of the book is this, is that in you and in any business, there are three different types of people. And here they are. There's the manager, and that's the person who, like, they like to manage. They want to know what's going on. And it can be sometimes a bottleneck to a company, but it needs to happen. It's the person who kind of keeps things running. There's a manager. There's also a technician. You in your job, whatever you do, you are at least a technician in something. There is a specific job that you do, and it must be done a certain way. There's a technician in all of us. But for a business to do well, his premise is that most of us operate as a manager or a technician if we own our own business. That most people that open up businesses have an entrepreneurial spirit, at least a little bit in them, but most of the time they're not truly entrepreneurs. So therefore, after a time, they resort back to going to a manager or a technician, and that will kill a business. Because a business, an entrepreneur in the business has to ask the question, like, how? Like, how can we do this better? Or what if? If you've ever been in a business or in any kind of organization and you started dreaming about what if, maybe you dreamed about what if for your own life. What if I did that? See, that's the entrepreneurial spirit in you. We all have this in us. It's the thing in us that longs for a little bit more. Like if you have something you want, is the grass really greener on the other side? I saw a truck the other day, an air conditioned like fixing type, you know, AC truck, and it said the grass really is greener on the other side. It's this idea that we long for more. Right? We dream a little, and almost all of us do this. If you're any kind of leader, you many times can be obsessed with the future. It's part of the human spirit. We want progress, right? If you're in a business and it doesn't progress, there's no progress, what happens? I mean, for the most part, it's going to die. It has to change the way it thinks. It has to change what it does. Do you know that we see progress in the Bible? If you look at, you know, look at the Bible, and we're talking about, you know, 6,000 years of history for the most part. Was it hit, Nick?
Front fender was a little loose, so I just took it the rest of the way off for you.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. That's what made it, right?
So if you look at the book of, if you look at the Bible, okay, easily 6,000 years of history, what is where does the Bible start? It starts with Adam and Eve, and where are they?
In the garden.
In the garden. Have you ever read the very last chapter of the Bible, Revelation 21? Where are they? Where are they? You don't know? They're in a city. The Bible goes from a garden to a city. Now, is there going to be, you know, in the new heavens and the new earth, will there be gardens? Yes, I'm sure they will be. But you need to understand that in the Bible, we see progress. It's just something that happens. It's part of who we are. Part of who we are. What about your kids? Man, your kids dream about the future, right? I'm sure to some capacity they will ask questions. You know, they're always asking why about stuff. Man, I know whenever I was a kid, even a teenager, I would dream a lot about stuff. I wanted to know, like, would I have kids? You know, where would I work? Where would I live? Would I be married? Would my wife be good looking? You know, important stuff like that. Like, that's just part of who I was as a kid. But here's what's interesting is that you'll find is as you get older, unfortunately, we quit dreaming a lot. As we get older, I think life happens and there are lots of dreams and progress that we really wanted to happen, but we just get into this thinking and we get jobs and life happens. And I think we get to this place where we just, we're fine with not having what's kind of inside of us. We're fine with not having desires. We're fine with, and what happens is over time, I think we just believe in our hearts and minds that we're just, that's just another world. Like that's just something we shouldn't think about at all. And we've all been there, right? Wondering if this is it, the life that we're actually living right now. Like, is this it? Is this the best that it gets? I recently heard that 70% of people in the U.S. hate their jobs. 70% of people in the U.S. hate or dislike their jobs. And because of that, they're not going to be engaged in what they do, and they're not going to do great work. The late Steve Jobs, who founded Apple, said that for you to do great work, you have to love what you do. If you're going to do something great, you have to love what you do. I bring all that up because there's that tension that we all feel in life. It's just there. We just wonder. And we're going to jump in today, and I know you're asking, like, are we ever going to get into the Bible? Yes, and we're going to jump into Ephesians chapter 2, but I want you to know that you were made for more. In all of life, especially people in the U.S., tend to feel that tension. It's just a tension, like we were just made for more. So what does the Bible say about it? So these next couple passages are some of the most famous verses in all the Bible. They're some of those famous verses. So foundational to life, like you... It's just like you. These are some verses that are just primary. You have to understand these. So here it is. You can look at it for yourself. For Ephesians chapter 2, I think it's we're going to do verses. What do we have? We have it on the screen there? Yep, 8 and 9. All right, here we go. And I want to look at just a couple sections in here. For it is by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not from yourselves. This is Paul writing to the church in Ephesus. Not from yourselves. It is a gift of God, not by works. It's almost like he's repeating, so that no one can boast. What is he saying here? So first, where it says it is by grace you have been saved. Grace is the source, right? It's God's grace. It's God's good heart. It's when we didn't deserve it. When we were in the far country, you deserved hell. In separation from God, it is God's grace that he came after you. It's from God. And here's what I want you to know here. I think grace, us understanding that grace, is the fuel for your life. Do you know that a car, for the most part, needs fuel? Now, we live in a day now where there's electric cars and Teslas that look good and they're actually fast. So that's kind of cool. But the idea is that gas or electricity, right, is the fuel, is what powers it. Every once in a while, you need to find a place in your life where you can go back and realize what you would have been without Jesus. I mean, think about the mess that you are today and you have Jesus, right? Think about that. We are, like, if we're honest, we're all of us in some ways are a hot mess, right? You're a hot mess, man. There's just crazy stuff going on in our lives. There are thoughts that we have. There are frustrations that we have about our own heart and souls and things that are going on. And we can get frustrated. And our heart can grow cold and life just happens. And the next thing you know, we lose our passion for God. We lose, you know, this idea of grace. We just forget. what Jesus has done for us. And I think we have to find a place on a regular to go back and think about what Jesus did for us and just live with kind of this attitude of gratitude. I think it's VeggieTales that said a grateful heart is a happy heart, right? Like, it's one of the keys to life, that if you will learn to be grateful, not always longing for what's more, but learn to be grateful and appreciative of what you have, you will find that you're a happy person. Now, so we see this idea of grace. It's of God. It's from God. It's Him. And that should make us grateful. And then we see that faith, it says, how are you saved? Through faith. Faith, watch this, faith is the vehicle that gets you there. It's the vehicle. It's like, if you want to get to God, you got to get on the car of faith. It's faith. What is faith? It's this assurance. The book of Hebrews says it's an assurance. It's a confident assurance of what is to be. It's not just, well, I really hope, you know, one day I'll make it to heaven, or I hope that I could be, you know. It's more than just a hope. It's a confident assurance. When you read the Bible and you see who God is, there should be this assurance in you that you believe that and you're going to live that out. Right? It's not just, oh, that sounds like a great idea. No, it's like, I believe that and I'm going to live that out. It's from God. So Paul says, we don't boast. Salvation is from God and it's to us. You can't do anything to earn it. I was just riding bikes with a guy who is who's an atheist. He's an airline pilot, a good guy. We're riding bikes on Thursday and we were up in Franklinton with a big group of people, and it just started pouring. I don't know if you remember Thursday. It just started pouring on us like crazy. Lightning. Well, this guy's an airplane pilot. He flies like the big planes, and he told me, we pulled over and got underneath the shelter, and he's like, dude, I'm trained to get away from lightning. You know what I mean? Like, if you're an airplane pilot, you don't want to mess with lightning, right? He's like, we fly away from lightning. We get, by all costs, we get away from lightning. And man, he knows I'm a pastor, and we have some interesting conversation. And he was like, man, he's like, I don't know if there's enough prayers for me. You know, like he just has this sick. What is he doing? It's the natural way that people think. They think, man, you don't know what I've done. You don't know where I've been. I don't know that God could ever do anything with me anyway. You see, that's the beauty of it, is you've done stupid things and so have I. But it's of God. It's from God. It's not even really... In some ways, it's not even about you. It's about Him and what He did. And it's applied to you. But you do it by faith. I have this phrase up here, and maybe this will make sense to you. The life you lived is a measure of the grace that you grasp. The life that you live, the life you live right now, how you live the Christian life is a measure of the grace that you grasp. If you understand what God has done for you, then that is the fuel that will propel you forward to do great things for Him. Not because you have to, but because you don't. But because you get to. You see, when you understand grace, there's this sense of gratitude. And what does it do? It fleshes itself out in the way that we live. The Bible says that His commands are not burdensome. Why? Because if you understand in light of all what God's done for you, then you're going to want to live the life that He has for you. See? I want to challenge you to get a vision for what He did for you, to go to that place and figure out, God, what would you have me to do in light of what you've done moving forward? Now, another question we usually have is, what exactly? So we understand God's grace. We understand it's from God. Really, right? For us now, what is He calling us to do, right? Look at what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. And we're just going to look at these couple of verses today. That'll be it. But look what it says here. He says, for we are God's handiwork. Now, other translations will say masterpiece. You got to think, it's this idea of like this painting that has been worked on forever. You know what I mean? I think about some of these paintings that like you can go see in art museums and galleries and, you know, stuff by Da Vinci and all this stuff, like worth millions and millions of dollars, because it can't be replicated. Like, it's like a one and done. It's a one and only. He says, you are the masterpiece, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. Even today, with everything that we have when it comes to computers and technology, there's some great things out there. I don't think there's a person that exists that would debate the human body as the most complex organism that has ever been created, and I would say will ever be created. It's just absolutely incredible. If you just think about the human body that you inhabit today, it's just incredibly complex. Whenever God breathed into you, like if you think, go back to Genesis, when God breathed into the human body, it's absolutely incredible what happened. It's pretty amazing. And here's the thing, you were created for a purpose. Like God created you for something. Watch this. I've heard it said that the two most important days of your life are these two. Ready? Day number one, the day that you were born. That was pretty important, right? You need to be born. It's good. Check. You were on here, you were born. Check. I would venture to guess that many people haven't figured out the second one. Here it is. And the day you find out why. Two important days in your life are the day that you were born and the day that you find out why. You see, this is a question of design. You're created to be more, but how do you know what that is? You were created for more. You were created to be more. You were created as a masterpiece. Now, here's why. Why is this so important? There's a couple reasons. One day, you and I are going to stand before God and give an account for our lives. So there's a certain, you want to go there knowing that it has paid, if I can say it in the business term, some good return on investment for God. Like, what's God's return on investment for your life? God's return on investment for a person like Billy Graham or name your favorite Christian guy was probably pretty good. Many people came to faith. Many lives were changed because of it. Not just evangelism, not just telling people about Jesus, but were their lives better? Were people different? Because, I mean, even today, you don't even have to be a Christian, and people talk about this idea of making a difference in the world, right? Is the world better because you came into it? That's a great question. But for the Christian and even for the non-Christian, if you live outside of your calling for too long, you will be frustrated. If you live outside of why you are here, the more you find out why and the more you can live into that, the more fulfilled you will be in life. And listen, I want you to know that I think your calling many times can be something that you might have a calling for this season of life, and there might be something else for another season of life. But it's to figure out what is it in this specific time in my life am I called to do, and you go out and you do that. What is God calling you to do? Why are you here today? You see, I don't believe you will ever live a life fulfilled until you find out why you were here. Another way I would say this, and we'll put this on the screen, is that you were not just saved from something, you were saved for something. You were saved. God plucked you out, called you out. You were saved from something. You were saved from death, hell, a life apart from God. That's a fact. But that's not all. You were saved for something. In other words, God saved you from something for you to do something. That's what this verse says, right? It says you were God's masterpiece, creating Christ Jesus, what? To do good works. And then it goes even further than that. It says, which God planned for you to do. Like, that boggles my mind that God has things specific for me. Now, what I'm doing right now is part of that. It's not all of that, but it's part of it. This is one of the things God created me to do. It's something that's in me for a long time. And that's kind of what you got to find out, is that you're going to do things in life just in general. And then there's going to be things that you do that promote the kingdom of God. I think you can promote the kingdom of God in all areas of life. So I'm not saying you have to be a pastor. I'm not saying that by any means. As a matter of fact, there's not many people in this room that would even understand that. So the role. So you don't need to be a pastor. But what is it that you're called to do, and do that in such a way that would glorify God? Right? Most people, for most people, it's in some kind of business. Like, what is it that you're called to do? So, how do I find my calling? How do you find your calling? If you're in here and you're like, I'm not really sure what I'm called to do, it's okay. Like, again, like I said, I know part of my calling and I'm still exploring other things. At this part in my life, like, I'm bivocational. I don't just work for the local church. I've worked for the local church for a really long time. So I'm in my 40s now, so I'm having to rethink, okay, so what does that look like to only work for the local church just part of the time? And how do I provide value to the world with the other part? Does that make sense? So it's, I'm in this with you. It's like, hey, God, what's next a little bit? Like, what's going on inside of me? So how do you know your calling? I'm going to give you two words, and I really think you need to wrestle with these. This is going to help you figure out what your calling is. It's two words. We're going to put them up at the same time. How do you find your calling? It's passions and giftings. It's passions and giftings, passions and giftings. Let's talk about the first one. What are you passionate about? It's unfortunate that in the Christian life, I think many people think that they should run from their passions. Now, there are worldly and bad passions. I get that. But listen, a clue to who you are and a clue to what you're called to do, you already have somewhat of a passion for. It's already in you. God placed it in you a long time ago. Now, sometimes we have to fan that into flame. Paul tells Timothy, fan in the flame, the gift that God gave you. There's something in you that you might have to fan a little bit, but that's okay. It's what is already in you. There is emotion tied to it. It's a passion. Do you know why they call the passion of the Christ the passion of the, you know, it's this idea that there's this excruciating passion, can also mean suffering, but there's lots of emotion tied to it. When you talk about passion in your life, there should be something that's like, you're like, me, 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 me. You know, if somebody's talking about it, you're like, me, me, me. Like, there should be this, yeah, like, I can get excited about that. What? Building Habitat for Humanity. Great. I can get excited about that. Or, you know, I want to save, you know, the whales. Great. I can get passionate about that. I mean, you name it. Like, I like to build buildings. All right, great. I can get passionate about that. Like, what is that thing? That's what's so crazy about it, is that it's so broad. Like, who knows what it, passion. What are you passionate about? I gave you the Steve Jobs quote, to do great work, you have to do things that you love. Like, you can't just do great work outside things that you love. So John Maxwell has said this. He was a pastor, probably still be considered a pastor, leadership guru. He says, when you talk about passion and purpose, you have to ask two questions. One, what breaks your heart? In other words, what is jacked up in the world that grabs you? It might be about the whales. So go get some of that. Go do whatever you got to do to make a difference when it comes to whales. What, I'm not telling you, I don't know what it is, but you got to figure out what breaks your heart. And another way of kind of saying the same thing is what keeps you up at night. When your mind just wanders and you're able to just think about whatever you want, what messes with you? What keeps you up? Right? Does that make sense? Like, there's things already in you that you're wondering, like, okay, what's the deal? Another way you think about this is like, what would you do for free if you could? What would you do for free? Thank you. That's you version, NIV, I recognize it. Right? What would you do for free? And there's some really practical stuff, like maybe it's a hobby, or maybe it's something else that you could do for free. And hey, what would happen if you did that so well that people started to pay you to do it? I really like public speaking. I've liked it for a long time. Preaching is not all that I like to do. I like public speaking and I like helping people. If I get the opportunity to speak into, like, if we would call it a secular environment, I do that. And I want to help people in that environment as well. Right? Like, that's just something I like. Do you see how? So my passion, it connects in the Christian world, but it also connects outside as well. So don't just, it's not just like a Christian thing. It's a God thing. It's a world thing. And we need to figure out ways how to use our passions and our giftings for Christ. So the second thing Passions and giftings. So what are your passions? And then what are your giftings? Listen, how many of you guys know that you could be, it's not enough just to be passionate about something. You need to be somewhat gifted in it. I could be passionate about leading worship. It doesn't matter. You don't want to hear me sing music. Like, you probably have passions that you like and you want to work on. But there needs to be some gifting that follows. Now, can I play the guitar because I have a passion for it in my own home and work on it and get better? Sure. Will I ever be great at it? Probably not. So you have to focus on the things that you already have natural inclinations in. They are called strengths, not weaknesses. And the idea is that most people work on their weaknesses so they can be well-rounded. When it comes to character, work on weaknesses. But when it comes to like your competencies and stuff, you need to work on your strengths. Find those couple of things that are already in you and you work those. Because listen, if you go from 1 to 10, 1 to 10, 10 being great, 1 being terrible. If you're a 3, you can spend your whole life working on it and you might be a 5. But there are already things in you right now that you're starting out as a 5. And if you will commit your life to working on it, you could be an 8 or a 9. You see, in your weaknesses, you're never going to be an 8 or a 9. Ever, ever, ever. And you can spend your whole life being mediocre at a 5. But there are some things in you right now that you're already pretty good at. And if you will spend your time and attention working on it, you could be an 8 or a 9. Preaching is something for me that I was already decent at it. So what do? I work the craft and I work on it. And that way I can be an 8 or a 9 one day. Does that make sense? This is just an example. For me, cycling. I started cycling and I'm decent at it. I'm decent at it. I kind of have a good build. You know, you could be 300 pounds on cycle. Great. But I'm going to smoke you all day, every day. You just have too much weight. You can't be 300 pounds on cycle and be fast. I was already skinny. Right? I was just naturally skinny. So it lended itself to me in cycling. Something like football. I like football, but I'm 135 pounds soaking wet on a good day. I'm not going to be that great in football. You can pummel me. Right? Does that make sense? There are certain ways that you're wired and even body types that play itself out to certain things. So you're just going to have to figure what that is and go with it. So there are going to be some things you're great at, and that's great. There are going to be some things that you're passionate about, but you're really not so gifted in it. And I would say figure out where your passions and your giftings lie. Does that make sense? So I want to close kind of with this. So when it comes to the local church, a good way, like, you're going to really want to try to do two different things. One, the local church, what we do on a Sunday, runs and goes by volunteers. Most people would say that the church, the local church, is the largest volunteer organization in the world. If you can name me another one, go ahead. But it is like it's this mass of people to volunteer. So one of the things I think that this is for almost all churches, but us as well, is that we need to be people who are volunteering and helping in different departments, different areas of our local church, partially to find out what we're passionate about. And what you're going to find is that I've heard different people say that you have 3 or 4 things already in you that you're good at that you don't even know. I've heard people say that the graveyard is the wealthiest place in the world because people die and they take their dreams and their gifts that were never realized with them to the grave. To the grave. It's the wealthiest place in the world, the graveyard. So what is it? So I would say, one, I want you to plug into the local church. We need to be people who just serve. Jesus said it's better to, what, receive than to give? Nope. It's better to give than to receive. Richest guy in the world, Jeff Bezos. Guess what he does? He gives a ton through the organization that he set up. So many people order stuff through him. Does he give or does he receive? He receives money in return, but he gives a lot of service. Name whatever you want. Name whatever great business you want. They give. They give something. Jesus said it's better to give than to receive. The richest people in the world are givers. That is a fact. It's better to give than to receive. So how is it that you can give to the local church in this body? I think everyone needs to be a part of that. The second thing is this, is that how can you give beyond that? In other words, to the, you're here in this building roughly 1 hour, you know, every 2 weeks, really. 1 hour every 2 weeks. What do we do with the other hours? Like, how can we give in that way? Does that make sense? Like, how can we take Jesus with us? How do we do whatever it is we're passionate about, whatever it is we're gifted in, to the marketplace? How do we bring Jesus into it? It's going to be tied a lot to your passions, to your giftings. Passions, giftings, passions, giftings. Make sense? You're created to be more than you can ever dream or imagine. I want our church to be the kind of church that helps you step into that.